This is Scott Becker with the combined episode of Becker's Healthcare Podcast with the Becker Private Equity and Business Minute Podcast. We're thrilled today to be joined by Amber Walsh. Amber serves on the executive committee at McGuire Woods, mega law firm, one of the largest law firms in the world. She also, for a long time, headed up the healthcare practice at McGuire Woods and lived at the intersection of healthcare and also private equity. We're going to talk to her today about what are some of the trends she's watching, particularly coming out of a recent healthcare private equity conference sponsored by McGuire Woods. Amber, take it away. Tell us a little bit about what are some of the issues you're watching currently. What should people be watching in healthcare and private equity currently?
Yeah, thank you, Scott. I'm glad to be back. And yes, on March 1st and 2nd, we had our annual healthcare private equity conference. And you get a lot of really interesting viewpoints there. We have about 1,000 attendees. And there we get viewpoints from lenders, from private equity investors, but also from healthcare executives who either do or do not yet have private equity. And there were a couple of themes that came out of it. The first I'll mention is the lender perspectives. Obviously, everyone knows that the credit markets had a huge impact in 2022 in the second half and kind of slowing some deal volume. But it was really interesting to hear from the lenders in just the level of diligence and the deep dives and really high degree of attentiveness to borrower quality and to historical covenant compliance, so much more strict to get through underwriting. Obviously, retained optimism for 2023, but just the descriptions of the depth of the diligence and the assessment of a deal was really interesting. So that'd be the first one I'd mention for you.
And let me ask you a question. There's different types of lenders, and not everybody that's in healthcare generally, at least not for profit healthcare for sure, understands this, but there's bank lenders, there's private credit companies, there's different types of lenders. Can you take one moment and help explain to both our audience, just core audience plus health system audience, what the differences in lenders and if are the bank lenders more skittish than anybody currently?
Yeah, that's definitely what we're seeing. So when we're going out to the markets, we have the big bank lenders who continue to have an interest in healthcare, but they've got a lot going on in their banks and they've got a lot of expectations that come along with assessing a borrower in terms of, you know, depository accounts and other aspects of the relationship that can impact how they view a borrower. And we are seeing more hesitancy from those type of borrowers versus the other types of lenders that don't have big banks, don't have those other aspects to the relationship, who are technically in a loan relationship. It is a debt security, but it's a different type of debt security. And we're seeing that type of lender remain more interested and nimble and able to really do more with increased kind of not skittishness, but attentiveness to borrower quality, but still able to move faster with that latter type of lender.
Thank you. And even this was prior to the Silicon Valley Bank meltdown. We'd already seen traditional bankers much more cautious than the private credit, private debt shops. And I take it that skittishness, that differentiation between the private debt, private credit investors or lenders has become even more amplified post Silicon Valley Bank and some of the most recent bank challenges and failures.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. It's so fresh. We're still just a couple of weeks into that. But yes, I think that's definitely true.
Thank you. Let me lead you into trend number two that you're watching or talking point two.
Yeah, so this is really interesting. And we heard this universally, but the most interesting, aligned, consistent view came from the investment banking community that was at the conference. And that is that they expect 2023 to be the year of the add-on transaction. So these large investment banks or even the boutique banks that only do healthcare deals are seeing so many more add-on transactions come to market than platform transactions. And so by that, we mean the core first investment by institutional capital to form a new private equity-backed healthcare company. That's kind of the definition, loosey-goosey, of a platform. We're seeing so fewer of those, probably due to the state of the credit markets and the state of valuations, which I'll talk about next. But we are continuing to still see, and the investment bankers absolutely are seeing, lots of add-ons. So smaller, adding on a practice to an existing platform, adding on a surgery center to an existing surgery center platform, et cetera.
And a platform, just for just talking points, may very well be like a 40-person orthopedic practice, 100-person orthopedic practice. That might be a platform deal. And then the add-on deal might be a 4 to 10-person practice that's added onto that, bolted on, just for very simplistic understanding. The same thing across industries. Amber, thank you very, very much. So much more add-ons, much less platform big deals, many more add-on deals. Tell us what else you're watching. You mentioned valuation.
Yeah, valuations, and this is no great surprise. We definitely started to see this 6 months ago, and it has continued. Valuations by no means are tanking or dramatically dropping, but they are normalizing. So a lot of people are saying it's a revert to the mean. It's, you know, we're taking off the super frothy insanity, some people would say, from a year and 18 months ago, and getting down to more reasonable valuations. But no one is saying that it's a dramatic hit. So it's probably also why you continue to still see plenty of add-on transaction opportunities, because valuations haven't changed that much, just reduced a little bit.
Thank you very, very much. And do you have any sense of just ranges of multiples? When multiples are really high, you might see 14 to 18 times earnings, which is really high. Now closer to 9 to 13 or so, or it depends, of course, on the sustainability of the company, the growth prospects of the company, but also the ability to finance deals makes those come down some too, because if you can't finance them at high multiples, the buyer's only putting so much equity into it. So you're seeing multiples come down a few turns at least.
I think that's right, although I would actually personally expand the range that you just mentioned. So I think that you see as low as still maybe a 7. And a lot of it, there's some gamesmanship about the multiple, because first you have to establish the EBITDA and agree on that before you can agree what the multiple is. But I think you see as low as 7. And there, when it was as heightened, you were seeing north of 20 in some platforms, in some markets, and in some sub-industries of healthcare.
Thank you very, very much. And EBITDA is a short form way of adjusting earnings, but think about net income. Then any kind of a deal, people have to agree to sort of what do they really think is the net income of a company when you really sort of either add back or take out salaries, do other kinds of things, make adjustments, and then that's multiple times a multiple to give you the value of the company or the price of the deal. Thank you very much. Amber, the next trend that you're watching closely.
Yeah, this is, I think, one of the most fun things to hear a discussion about, and that is growth plans for existing invested businesses. And it felt like a really healthy but exciting balance. I would call it balance. Some people might say there was a split of belief in what's the best way to grow right now. Because you have one school of thought, and this came out a lot in a lot of the breakout sessions where we talk about specific subsectors, GI, orthopedics, anesthesia, life sciences, et cetera. One school of thought being you have to be ready to be super, super innovative. Now's the time to invest in AI, workforce solutions, pivot to value-based care. There's a lot of attention, probably more than ever, and across industries, and kind of that's the way to grow. That's what you need to do to reduce cost and generate a more sustainable revenue. Then there's another school of thought, which is you stay the course and you've got traditional ancillaries and they've been super successful for years, and they will continue to be. So that's where you have ambulatory surgery centers, ASCs, you know, one of yours and my personal industries that we know really well. That continues to be a growth focus for so many different practice management companies. Again, orthopedic, ENT, anything that it traditionally is, supports an ASC. And then you'd put, you know, pathology, anesthesia in those kind of ancillary lines for a business. So it was this interesting balance, or two different schools of thought of, you stay the traditional course. These are, you know, very appropriate and valuable additions to a business, a healthcare business, versus let's go all in on tech and reimbursement improvement. So I thought that was a very interesting thing to hear session over session.
But it's really a fascinating perspective, particularly in sort of a, what people view as a recessionary climate. Are you really focusing on efficiency and reducing cost and improving the bottom line that way? Or are you looking at growth through traditional ancillaries, or some of both? They're not necessarily mutually exclusive, but it is fascinating to see sort of the playbook and people looking at, we better be more efficient right now, but also should we be investing in technology? Should we be investing in new ancillaries and so forth and so on? So it's really trying to get that right balance between revenue growth as well as efficiency and not taking on too much more debt for a lot of places, it seems like.
Absolutely.
Thank you. And Amber, tell us point number five or six.
Sure. I've got two more. I'll give you point number five here. So that was what the hot sectors are right now. And this didn't surprise me, but it definitely played out. And, you know, we have a sneak peek at JP Morgan every year. The McGuire Woods team attends JP Morgan in full force. You hear so much there, new deals coming to the market and what people are focused on. And that's about a month and a half before our conference. So what we heard at our conference was what we heard at JP Morgan and what we expected to hear for hot subsectors, which are cardiology, CV. So much of cardiology and cardiovascular surgery and interventions are moving to the outpatient market. So that continues to be a huge, huge push. And there's not a lot of consolidation yet in that market. So that continues to be a really big focus. And then interestingly, as has been the case for a long time, but because it is such a big amorphous area, is behavioral health. Behavioral health is continuing to get a lot of attention, dominantly the outpatient behavioral health. We heard a little bit less, you know, excitement on inpatient this time around, but those are two subsectors I would mention that are getting particular attention right now.
So a lot of movement in cardiology and in behavioral health. When you talk about behavioral health, I see the different types of things. There's sort of the clinics that relate to rehab of some sort. There's autism clinics. What kind of behavioral health things are you looking at or seeing?
Yeah, the outpatient programs, the specialized outpatient programs that really started to get a ton of attention even before COVID due to the mental health parity laws and various things that frankly date back a decade to the ACA, but definitely since COVID, you're seeing more and more attention and interest in the outpatient programs that are targeted at specific patient or customer, is often the term in behavioral health, populations. So you mentioned the autism, you know, substance abuse, eating disorders. That's been, you know, out there for a while, but moving more into these outpatient programs with a ton of technology and digital health component. Behavioral health really lends itself to telehealth and digital health opportunities.
And a lot of that is commercial paid, individual paid. I know some states are spending a lot of money that they got from OxyContin and so forth, settlements, opioid settlements. Where's the money coming from that's the consumer payment for these types of programs?
Yeah, there is heavy, heavy self-pay. There's very little, but there is some Medicaid reimbursement. And there's a little bit of government pay, but you're right. It's more and more commercial, but always a heavy, heavy self-pay component.
Thank you very much. And tell us one more trend you watched coming out of these discussions and events.
Yeah, so the last one is near and dear to the lawyer's heart, which is probably a heavier focus than ever before on the regulatory climate and the impact that is having on investment decisions, including at the state level. So, you know, obviously, over the course of the past couple of months, there's been a ton of attention. Everyone is talking about the FTC proposed rule, eliminating or dramatically decreasing the impact of non-competition covenants. That is still a proposed rule. It's going to be a really long time before that gets sorted out. But there's a lot of attention on that. And there's been some follow-on actions by state AGs. There's been a lot of antitrust discussion. And at the same time, you also have states who are starting to regulate even smaller healthcare transactions in new ways that they had not previously. So having to submit to particular states to get approval before you close a small physician deal, for example. These are developments that have all been happening over the course of the past year. And it has become dominant enough that you hear investors becoming more and more savvy on these issues and introducing these regulatory opportunities, but risks, into their deal thinking. So I thought that was kind of the last really interesting trend.
But interesting how active the antitrust authorities are. In some spots, it seems like rightfully or wrongfully so. In some places, they seem to be attacking hospital and health system mergers, and hospital and health systems are really struggling. But a fascinating situation that's going on both at the state and federal level. In any event, Amber Walsh, brilliant as always. Thank you for visiting with us today on the Becker's Healthcare and Becker Private Equity Podcast. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.